Well, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Hollander. I'm the chair of the Palmerston North Defence Heritage Advisory Group. And it's my pleasure to be your MC for this evening. Tonight, we hold the second of our evening public lectures. And this particular one is to celebrate the publication of Glyn's book. Now, as far as an outline is concerned, the programme for tonight is fairly straightforward. We're going to have a meeting shortly. We're also then going to introduce our author, Glyn Harper, who will speak to us about the work that he's done. There'll be a time for questions after Glyn has spoken. And then we're going to introduce Professor Kerry Taylor from Massey University to speak. And then following Kerry, we'll have Colonel Andrew Brown, New Zealand Defence College, who will speak about the book. And then, of course, we allow the author to have another speech, whereupon the Mayor will close the proceedings, and then we'll have a closing karakia. So that's the general outline for the evening. Can I ask you all, please, just to check your mobile phones and make sure that they're all on silent, and to remind you about the Alert Level 2 health requirements. At this stage, can I call Huatahi to the stage to present the meeting?
Nau mai ra, whakatau mai ra, hare mai ra e. A tēnā tātou katoa, he karaki te nāne. Whakarongo aki au ki te tangi a te manu a te mātui. Tui, 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 tui a. Tui a i runga, tui a i raro. Tui a i roto, tui a i wapo. Tui a ki te here tangata. Ka rongo te pō, ka rongo te ao. Tutu whakamaua ki a tina, tina. Haumi e, hui e, tai e. Ngā mihi. Āmeni.
Ngā mihi. Well, it's now my pleasure to introduce our author, officially, Lieutenant Colonel retired, Professor Glyn Harper, QSM, who's Professor of War Studies at Massey University, to present to us this evening. Glyn.
Kia ora. Thank you for that introduction, Joe, and thank you for being here tonight. I know it hasn't been easy for a lot of us. This is our second go at it, and if this hadn't worked out, I'm not sure whether we would have done a third one, Joe, but never mind. I'm going to talk this evening about putting this book together, The Frontline, New Zealand and the Second World War in Photographs. Before I do, I'll just explain some of these images. That's an anti-submarine exercise in the Hauraki Gulf. That's a group of New Zealanders flying a Paul Bolton to fire, a fighter plane that was already obsolete at the start of 1940, and over 50% of them were killed when they came up against the Luftwaffe in 1940. And of course, the first echelon leaving Wellington docks in January 1940. New Zealand and the Second World War in photographs has been my research project, and my wife's research project, I have to say as well, for about the last 5 years. Some years ago, we did this book here called Images of War, New Zealand and the First World War in Photographs, and we thought we really needed to do a follow-up and do a book on New Zealand and the Second World War in Photographs as well. And my wife, Susan, who's trying to hide over here in the corner, and I looked at over 30,000 images, largely from the three service and museums, and of course many people send in their family albums as well. And I do really need to acknowledge the keepers of the photographs at the three service museums, Dolores Ho from the National Army Museum, Rachel Stallard from the National Museum of the Royal New Zealand Navy, and Matthew O'Sullivan from the Air Force Museum of New Zealand. Without their dedication and their efforts in scanning the thousands of photographs we requested, the book would not have been possible, and we requested over 3,000 images be sent to us. And during the lockdown period, Susan and I selected what we thought were the best 1,000 of them. The original contract for the book said you could have 1,000 photographs in. So we had 3,000 and we narrowed it down to 1,000. Lo and behold, times have changed, publishing changed, and the publisher said, no, you can only have 820. So basically we had to go back and narrow them down a little bit more. And this search involved us going to the Army Museum, to the Navy Museum, to the Air Force World down in Canterbury, and of course about 30 people sent in their private images. And the book that we're launching tonight is the result of it. There are some considerable differences when trying to tell the story of the Second World War as opposed to that of the First. For one thing, there are many, many more images of New Zealand in the Second World War. I quote a British historian who I admire immensely, the late Richard Holmes, and he observed that the Second World War was definitely a photographer's war. And he made the point that although there is abundant film of the Second World War, somehow it is the Second World War that freezes the moment for posterity. Now, war photography had been around since 1846. The first war photograph was taken in the American-Mexican War of that year. But by the Second World War, war photography had really come of age. And in the Second World War, New Zealand's effort was massive, and somehow we needed to capture it. This. With the First World War, we could focus fairly much on the New Zealand Division in France and the New Zealand Mounted Rifles, with some images of the home front, but then that was about it. With this book, though, we had to make sure we included all three services, obviously the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, and there was also much more to capture as well. We had to capture the POW experience, an experience really unique to New Zealand and the Second World War, and that is a surreptitious photograph taken at Starling 383 by a hidden camera. And I'll talk about POW photographs a little bit later on. And here we have Eleanor Roosevelt, the First Lady of the United States, visiting New Zealand Wrens at HMS Philomel on the 4th of September 1943. Actually, before I started this project, I had no idea that Eleanor Roosevelt had actually visited New Zealand in that year. So we have to compile a book that captured so many of these images, and I hope we managed to do it. And this is the contents page of the book, and you can see it does cover a wide spread of photographs. Now, for the rest of this presentation, which will be reasonably short, hopefully not more than 25 minutes, I will focus on the first four chapters and explain the rationale for them and show some of the photographs. Then I'm going to focus on some really interesting and unusual images from the book and discuss one dilemma that we had in using photographs. And hopefully it's a dilemma I still haven't resolved. And hopefully that will leave some questions to be answered at the end of the presentation. So we start with being at war again. And these are original images I've taken of German troops advancing into Poland in 1939, with Hitler taking a victory salute in Warsaw in that year. We managed to be able to include these images because in the archives at Waiuru is a German propaganda album, and there are many, many unpublished photographs in them, and we were able to use that. So Germany invades Poland in September 1939, and New Zealand is an early respondent. Here we have members of the 27th Machine Gun Battalion lining up to board in January 1940 and then sailing away from Lyttelton. In the early days of the war, 1939 and 1940, the New Zealand Army saw very little action. It had virtually gone out of existence in the 1920s and 30s and had to be built up from scratch. So it was the Royal Navy, the Merchant Navy, and New Zealanders serving in the Royal Air Force who saw most of that military action in those early years. Here we have a group of New Zealand members of the Navy. They're actually members of the Royal Navy. They have come from New Zealand, they've been sent to the UK to train, and of course having a look and looking at the sites. And I've got to say, this happens to be one of my favourite photographs. This is a group of New Zealand sailors. They've taken part in being part of the Royal Guard at Windsor Palace. And after it, they're walking along the street and they see some nice-looking waitresses in a cafe, and they decided they need to impress them. So how do New Zealanders impress waitresses? They do a haka in front of them, and for their efforts, they were given a cup of tea. So it must have worked reasonably well. Of course, the Merchant Navy is involved in the war from the beginning, and this is a live-action shot of a near-miss on a Merchant Navy vessel in the English Channel in July 1940, and it's had a very lucky escape. Of course, for the Navy, the big battle in the early days is the Battle of the River Plate. And here we have Achilles with its guns blazing at the Graf Spee. That's the German pocket battleship, the Graf Spee. It's slightly damaged and sails into Uruguay, which is a neutral country. It's given 48 hours to leave. The commander of the Graf Spee believes that there's a much larger force waiting for him, so he decides he's to scuttle the ship. These are New Zealanders resting during a lull in the battle, and this is the fate of the Graf Spee, one of the early photographs taken while it's still on fire. And of course, we have the air war with training happening in New Zealand in these antiquated aircraft, Tiger Moths and Baffins. That's the state of our bomber fleet in New Zealand. If you look, that's actually armed up for a bombing run. Its payload is not that heavy when you compare it to what happens later on in the war with the Lancaster bombers and so forth. There is a bomber squadron in the UK, and their planes are a little bit different from these Baffins, which are flying in formation over the Canterbury Plains. In the UK, we have the 75th Bomber Squadron being formed. I should mention that learning to fly was immensely dangerous, and there are many casualties, which I'll talk about a little bit later on. Here is 75 New Zealand Squadron being formed early in the war in 1940, planning one of their first bombing missions. And of course, here's a photograph of some of them lined up prior to going. Should look and see how young some of those pilots look. Of course, we had pilots who were flying fighter planes as well, and this is one of the very first Spitfire planes. It's actually the prototype, taken in 1937, flying over the London docks. And of course, many New Zealanders in the RAF, over 500 at the outbreak of war, learned to fly these planes. And this is one, a New Zealand pilot, taken at Hornchurch in July 1939, just prior to the war starting. But meanwhile, in Egypt, the army is training and getting used to the terrain. 27th Machine Gun Battalion off on an exercise, a great photograph, and that's one of the ones used on the cover of the book. And then there is training under General Freyberg's ever watchful eye. Of course, the flies are dreadful, the fighting in the desert is hot and nasty, and the conditions are terrible. But it also provides an opportunity to see some of the sights. The pyramids, obviously a great attraction, the Sphinx. And this place here is of great attraction too. You'll note now that it's out of bounds to Allied troops. That is the Burqa Red Light District in Egypt, of course. All New Zealand soldiers went to have a look, so they said, and took photographs of it when they did. I conclude this because it's probably a project I'm going to be involved in sometime later with Nick Wilson, an epidemiologist, is here tonight. Christmas card sent by the 27th Machine Gun Battalion. The thing that I noticed straight away is the characters in it are smoking, and in probably about one out of three photographs, particularly of the Army, but also the Air Force, they always seem to be smoking or lighting a pipe. The war for the New Zealand Army personnel hadn't started by the end of 1940, but it was not far away. And of course, one of the big campaigns that they go to are the two disasters of Greece and Crete. Now, Greece and Crete are special in New Zealand's military history with the Second World War. They were the first land campaigns, They were both serious defeats, and for the first time in our military history, thousands of prisoners of war are left behind and basically spend the rest of the war incarcerated in German POW camps. That was not common in the First World War, where the numbers of POWs ranged somewhere between a few hundred to probably no more than 1,000. And in the Second World War, that had changed immensely. And here we have New Zealand soldiers on their way to Greece and looking happy to go. And this is a group of New Zealand officers from 18th Battalion looking very pleased to arrive. And of course, once they arrived, the population of Athens gave them a huge welcome. They were actually really pleased to see them, these allies that were going to help them fight the Italians and hopefully prevent the Germans from invading. Of course, we know that didn't happen. Now, when you think of Greece and campaigning there, you would think, oh, that sounds like a really hot climate. You know, the Greeks have great Mediterranean islands where everybody goes for a holiday. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for these soldiers in 18th Battalion, who actually found themselves fighting in a snowy front line. And of course, Greece became nothing but one long withdrawal, and they left Greece, and most of the New Zealand soldiers, certainly not all of them, but most of them wound up in Crete, where they had to prepare with very little time for an airborne invasion that they knew was coming. And that invasion soon happened with paratroopers. These are actually mountain troops, and you can see the paratroops in the trees here. And as I said, a large number, actually over 2,000 New Zealanders wound up being taken prisoner by the Germans. And this is an original photograph, that's why it's quite grainy. He's a paratrooper, and obviously he's got pointing. Make sure you search that guy, you know, get information from him. I spend a bit of time in chapter 4 covering the air war over Europe. In the First World War, aircraft had proved to be useful, particularly in their reconnaissance role, but they were never decisive to the outcome of a battle. This had changed by the time of the Second World War, when using aircraft and controlling the airspace was essential to the outcome of any clash of arms. And a vital part of New Zealand's contribution to the air war was some 1,200 New Zealanders who were sent to the UK to become part of the Royal Air Force. And they served in all campaigns fought by the RAF and in three of its operational branches, Fighter Command, Bomber Command, and Coastal Command. And here we have a picture of a Wellington bomber being loaded up before taking off on one of the bombing raids early in the war in 1940. Cleaning the cannon of a Spitfire prior to its taking off. And a Lancaster bomber, this is obviously later in the war, about 1942-1943, and this is a rarity. This is N for NAN, and it's managed to chalk up 100 operations. Now, Bomber Command in the Second World War had the highest casualty rate of any military service, and very few Lancaster bombers got to the magic 100 mark. Obviously, we had pilots in fighter squadrons. These are New Zealand pilots from 260 Squadron in front of their Hurricane fighter, taken in Scotland in 1941. And I've got to say, some of these pilots, they look like young boys, really, if you look at their faces. They are very, very young. And here we have takeoff time for a Lancaster bomber in 1943-1944, at the peak of the bombing effort over Europe, where their losses were about 1 in 3, and you have to think what's going through their minds as they're taking off on this bombing run. What were they doing? Well, here's an example of one aerial shot. The damage done to the Krupp's armament factory at Essen, that's taken in March 1945, and there isn't much remaining of it. Now, they're the first four chapters of the book. The other chapters are like this. Obviously, we have to spend a lot of time talking about North Africa. It is the longest chapter in the book. It's the longest ground campaign, and they took thousands and thousands of photographs. We have to cover the war at sea, and obviously we need to give the Pacific its due coverage as well. We have to look at the Italian campaign. And I needed to have a chapter on the POW experience and also how these these forces came home. Sorry, Jane. I'm now going to show you some images, and which I find quite interesting and unusual, and then talk about one of the dilemmas that we had. And we start with this one. Does anybody know who that lovely lady in the middle is? That's Vivian Lee, okay? A Scarlet O'Hara from Gone with the Wind, and she's touring with the old Vic company, and they're visiting a New Zealand field hospital, and this is a very unusual photograph in one of the photograph albums at Wairu. Now this is a really rare action shot, and I think it's a great image. The person taking that image has pressed it at exactly the right time. It's an anti-aircraft, the New Zealand aircraft, and the boat is going, and it's just shot down a Stuka plane. And I have to say, I was quite surprised because this book did feature on News Hub on TV3 some weeks ago, and the person contacted me the day after and said, I recognise this photo because my grandfather took it, and I'll send you some more information about it, and there's some more information. That's the camera he took it with, there's the photograph, and that's the caption on the back, and it says, exit Stuka, refer me. So it's a really nice shot. And so I thank Mitch Turnbull for sending that to me, by the way, and Mitch also sent me some other photographs, which I'm going to show you soon. This, I think, is an amazing photograph. This is some German naval raiders inspecting the damaged propeller shaft of the Tirpitz in Norway in early 1945. The Tirpitz has finally been sunk by Allied aircraft, and it's capsized, which means it's turned all the way over. They're standing on the bottom of the ship, and they're inspecting it for damage. While they're doing that, an RAF reconnaissance plane has gone past, flying really low, and taken that photograph. And if you look at it, you can see their facial features, and it's a very, very clear photograph. And I got to say, the camera work that obviously the RAF reconnaissance planes could do is very impressive. This is a photograph of Brigadier George Clifton on the left meeting Field Marshal Rommel in the centre with his arms folded behind his back. This photograph was taken 2 hours after Clifton's capture on the 4th of September 1942, and he has a long conversation with Rommel through the interpreter here. And Rommel initially says to him, why do you New Zealanders fight like gangsters? You did that at Minka Khan, where you killed some of our wounded soldiers. And Clifton has to explain what happened and why. And then Rommel says to him, why are you New Zealanders here at all? Are you here for the sport? And Clifton says, no, we're actually British citizens, and so on. This photograph was taken by a German soldier who was subsequently killed, and his camera was taken, the film developed, and it's wound up in several New Zealand albums. I have to say, there are a large number of German photographs in New Zealand albums, and Rommel is by far the most popular commander to be photographed. It really puzzled me when I found a nurse's album, looked through it, and there was only one picture of a army commander, and it was Rommel. You know, he was definitely the pin-up boy of the period. I didn't think he was that good-looking, actually, Joe, but obviously he struck a chord with him. This photograph caused us untold problems. This is Lieutenant George Katine of 28th Maori Battalion here, meeting up with his sister Wikitoria Katine in North Africa. Wikitoria, or Wiki as she was known, was the first Maori woman to serve as a nurse in the Second World War. Her brother George was awarded the Military Medal for his gallantry in Greece. Sadly, he would be killed 6 months later fighting the Italian campaign on the 7th of December 1943. Why it caused us so much problems was that it was miscaptured. It had the wrong name on the back of it. It named them as Lieutenant Cartwright, and we spent 3 or 4 days trying to find a Lieutenant Cartwright. We looked at the embarkation rolls, we looked at the Cintar database, we looked at base records and couldn't find a person by that name. We're about to give up when Dolores Ho at the National Army Museum was able to identify her, and then we were able to track down a little bit more information. really like this photograph. This is a group of prisoners of war at Stalag 383 on a gambling day. They're playing two-up, and the gambling stakes, if you'll notice, are packets of cigarettes. So they're gambling with packets of cigarettes. Now, let me tell you, this guy here ain't letting anybody near his stash, all right? You can tell by the tell by the photograph. Now, I mentioned a dilemma that I had putting this book together and thinking about photographs. As a historian, I've always resisted the temptation to alter or change primary source material, including photographs, because I think that can be somewhat misleading and perhaps distort some of the facts. And I'll show you an example of this, and I've chosen one relating to Passchendaele, because today is the 12th of October, and in 1917 New Zealand suffered its worst ever day. But they were fighting alongside the Australians, and the Australians were fighting at a place called Zonga Beach. And if you go into the Australian War Memorial, this photograph is against one of the walls, and it says Frank Early photograph taken of the Australians at Zonga Beach. The problem is that is not one photograph, okay? That is actually, in fact, 12 different photographs grouped together to form one image, which I think is a little misleading, and most of the Australian public don't know that. I'm not talking about composite photographs, but I'm talking about colour images. We didn't find any colour images, even though they were available at the time, because colour film was very expensive and most soldiers couldn't afford it. But it is now quite easy to get photographs digitally colourised. And in fact, Peter Jackson has led the way in this. If you saw his wonderful exhibition down at the Dominion Museum during the centenary, you would have seen some really stunning photographs in colour. And of course, his film, They Shall Not Grow Old, also had a number of coloured images like this. And I did wonder whether we should have perhaps considered colourising some of these images, particularly if some were already available. You can see what I mean from this one. Should we have considered colouring some of these images? Because, you know, they do look quite startling. In the end, we didn't, although that could have been a mistake. You know, I still stick by the fact, you know, primary sources, you shouldn't touch them. But if it's a way to engage with a younger audience and get people interested in the history, perhaps we should reconsider it. It certainly has given me something to ponder. Now, I'm going to conclude now and throw it open for questions. Really like this photograph. This is a New Zealand sailor. He's been away for a number of years. War's over, reuniting with his family. But you can tell his daughter doesn't actually know who this person is at this stage. He's very much a stranger. But photographs are an important primary source. And I hope from the book you can appreciate the range of photographs that are available and that it does reveal something of what it was like for New Zealanders who were there. They are moments that have been captured in time. And as Sandy Callister wrote on her thesis on photographs of the First World War, she stated, "Each image means that someone at some point took a photograph as a way of not forgetting." And I think by preserving and examining and thinking about these images, it means we don't forget either. And I don't think we should ever forget such a pivotal event in our nation's history. Thank you.
We've got a short period now where we can take some questions. If you do have any questions in relation to Glyn's presentation, before we have the next speaker. So are there any questions that anybody would like to ask of Glyn? Steve?
Glyn, the
you
mentioned that the Second World War was a time of quite a large amount of photography of World War II.
Yep.
What were the rules of engagement about sending that information back home?
Well, in the First World War, cameras were not supposed to be anywhere near or on a soldier. Second World War, you could have cameras and were encouraged to do so, but you weren't supposed to take them in the front line and take images, which could be beneficial to the enemy should you get captured. Of course, most soldiers eventually ignore those rules and do that, otherwise we wouldn't have live action shots, and we'd found quite a few of them, so they weren't supposed to do that. The thing that really puzzles me though, Steve, is the fact that New Zealand POWs were able to take so many photographs, because cameras were not permitted in prisoner war camps, and if they were, they were used to photograph special occasions like sports days and carnivals and so forth, because photographs could be used for making for making documents and planning escapes, but they certainly had them, and they certainly took photographs whenever they could. So that's the one that really puzzles me, as to how they were able to do that. Of course, I did not find any photographs from New Zealanders who were prisoners of war of the Japanese. I think that would just would have been too risky for them to take photographs. One down the front here, I think.
Glenn, how many of these photographs that you used came with useful information from either the photographer or the photo holder?
Yep.
Or were you left to, suss out the story?
It's a really good question, Neil. No, they all came with some information. Why we discarded a lot of images was when there was no information at all about them, and you'd be left guessing, and that's something we didn't want to do. As long as I had some information, and you can then track down a lot more information about it, even if you just had a place and date, that was enough. So all of the photographs that are in the book, we had some information about, and were able to then write a really useful caption around it as well.
Images still in private collections?
Phenomenal, I think. It always happens, as soon as the book comes out and some publicity happens, people contact and say, I've got all these images. And we were lucky that we got 20 people who sent material into us. I think there are thousands and thousands of images still out there in private hands, and it would be nice to get a few more into places where they could be used. But I think that there's just thousands available in family collections.
Great.
What sort of proportion of the photographs were official, if any, as opposed to those that were taken by the soldiers?
Graham, Susan and I spoke about this, and we decided to use as much as possible unofficial images, because the official ones have been published before, and they usually publish repeatedly over and over again. We would have used official photographs if we thought we didn't have enough. We do. Where I did think long and hard about using official photographs was for the New Zealand ground campaign in the Pacific, where we were a bit light on the ground, and for New Zealanders who served in coastal command of the RAF. Large number of them, two coastal command squadrons, designated New Zealand squadrons, but very few photographs. And I was tempted to go to the official ones, but we found about half a dozen, so we thought the ones that we did find, nearly all of them wound up in the book. But there are very few official photographs in this book. They're largely unofficial, taken by the people who were serving.
Well, I think that's a useful optic, isn't it, in terms of the soldiers and the men and women involved in the fighting, whatever position they were in.
Well, it gives us an understanding what they were interested in, rather than the top-down approach of what they should be interested in. So yeah, hopefully there is a different perspective in the book because of that.
Any other questions?
Did the images that you got, did they get digitised, or is it cleansed and
digitised? They have all been, the ones that we have all been digitised by the people who helped us. But from the 30,000 that we looked at, we only had digitised about 3,000. And I have to say, that took them several months to do that for us. And many thank yous as well, I have to say. It took an awful long time. Sorry, Joe, just one more slide. See? Sorry. Shameless plug. Okay.
That's really great. Thanks very much, Glenn. I'd like to now introduce Professor Kerry Taylor, who's head of school for History, Media Studies and Creative Communications in the College of Humanities and Social Science at Massey University. Kerry is also on the editorial board of the Massey University Press. So welcome, Kerry. Please come and give your delivery. leave you with that one.
Kia ora ena mana, kia ora ena iwi, tanakoto katoa. Welcome everybody. It's my great pleasure to be here. I've got, many hats. It suggests I may have many heads as well. I'm not sure whether that one's true. I'm here officially as the representative of the University Press tonight, so it's a great pleasure for me to be here. But seeing as I am Glenn's boss, it's a double pleasure. He's a great colleague. His enthusiasm you've seen today is endless. His contribution to the study of war in New Zealand, the experience, and I'm particularly keen to hear that this is a popular experience rather than the official view. I think that's been an amazing contribution, so this book's very, very welcome in that sense. I bring greetings from the rather incarcerated Auckland branch of Massey University Press. Unfortunately, our publisher Nicola Leggett and our associate publisher Tracy Borgfeldt can't be here today because they're under level 3 lockdown. They really do wish they were here, and Tracy, who's worked very particularly on this project with Glenn and Susan, has asked me very unambiguously to say what a pleasure it was working on this project. I think she has learned an awful lot herself, and Glenn and Susan, the pair, have produced what she says is one of the best experiences she's had in the publishing process. I think one of the things that was quite conspicuous was the high degree of organisation, which is not always conspicuous in authors and their engagement with publishers. So there's a very strong and heartfelt thanks from the press, from Tracy, Glenn and Susan. Glenn's contribution is very rich on a number of fronts. He's obviously been recently spending quite a lot of time on World War One, and a number of us here have had the pleasure of working with Glenn on the official history of World War One that Massey, the Defence Force, Ministry of Culture and Heritage have been part of. He's a great advocate for his subject area, and as a representative of the press, we clearly want an availability of the stock to disappear rather quickly so that we then go to second printing. Massey University Press is very proud of its history publication, and particularly, partly through Glenn's great efforts, through the war history kind of part of that list. So we're very proud to be associated with this volume, and I think it's it looks absolutely magnificent. A couple of the thank yous that I have are repeats of what Glenn said, but I think they're very important to reiterate. And what's very clear is that the three museums of the armed services are really central to this project, and it's been a collaborative project. And I know they will welcome the sense of some of their hidden gems being part of the public discourse for the first time sometimes. And it's really great to see that most of these photos are ones that I've not seen before. There's very few that sort of struck me as anything other than, wow, that's quite an interesting image. I do have to say a personal experience, when you showed the Eleanor Roosevelt thing, it made me remember that one of my grandfather's own war stories was the pleasure he took at having met Eleanor Roosevelt at one point during the war. He then proceeded to not go to war at all, went to a freezing works in Hawke's Bay, which was a different story entirely, but his war story was very much Eleanor Roosevelt. So the three service museums deserve a great thanks on behalf of the press. It's a very lavish and luxurious and I think really honourable book for the subject area, and that's not happened accidentally. The work of the author and his highly trained research assistant, co-author, co-creator, life partner, are part of that process. The work with archives and museums is another part of that, but there are quite important people who make the idea turn into a reality. So on behalf of the press, I'd like to thank some of our staff, the editor Anna Rogers, the managing editor Anna Boybees, I think is how we pronounce her name. It's been a challenge for me for quite some time. And last and certainly not least, Alice Bell, who was the designer. And I think with all Massey University Press books, we're greatly proud of their visual look, their feel, the kind of a culture of book production that we come with. And I think, particularly given the subject matter here, that's a very important and I think a very successful part of this volume. The last group of people that I'm thanking, so I'm really here as a ceremonial thanker. That's thanker with a T, not another letter that you might think of. Is to thank the Palmerston North City Council team, the Globe, the library team, Virginia, Maria, and Leslie in particular, who've been part of helping this event happen. And it's not the first attempt to have this launch. I'm glad we finally got there, despite the earthquake, the hailstorm, the other storm that we just recently had, and of course the global pandemic. And it's true to say that nothing at all will deter Glyn when he has his mind set on a project, and that's a really good thing. And the last but not least, to thank the Mayor, who's going to speak in a few moments, because he has supported Glyn and the War History Group here very actively. He supported Massey University and the press in a number of ways, and we find the joy of the city, the joy of being part of this, is enhanced by Grant's great enthusiasm. So thanks, Mayor. We'll be along very soon with the next project that we'd like you to support. So keep on rocking. So on behalf of the press, those who are here, those who are here in spirit, I think it's a wonderful book, and we're so proud that we're part of this project, and it's come together so, so extremely well. So thank you all.
Thank you, Chloe. Couldn't endorse that anymore. When you actually have a look at the weight of Glyn's books and the production that he's put together over how many years?
650.
There are certainly parts of the forest in New Zealand and overseas which are missing a few trees. Our next speaker is Colonel Andrew Brown. Andrew is the commander of the New Zealand Defence College, and we appreciate him coming here today from down the track to speak to us. So welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much. I'll let you use that one. Put that here. I won't trust my not particularly well-practiced parade ground voice and we'll use the microphone. Ina mana, ina reo, ina iwi o te motu, I hui hui nei, tēne aku mihi mahana, kia koutou, kia ora, tātou katoa. Mayor Grant Smith, Professor Kerry Taylor, ladies and gentlemen, it is a tremendous pleasure for me tonight, on behalf of Air Marshal Kevin Short, Chief of Defence Force, to officially launch the frontline images of New Zealanders in the Second World War. Professor Glyn Harper is the author of many books and a renowned historian. Glyn is absolutely at the front rank of scholars in New Zealand and with an international reputation. As Professor of War Studies at Massey University, Glyn also maintains a close association with the New Zealand Defence Force and the New Zealand Army. More importantly, Glyn is a personal friend and teacher to many, including myself. Glyn, thank you for your contribution to scholarship in New Zealand and tertiary education. It is very much appreciated by the New Zealand Defence Force. This book is a taonga. For me, it makes war, which for many is abstract, real. It provides a window on war, which for many is missing. The abstract becomes real in the pages of a picture book. Imagination takes flight. The mundane and the ordinary might attract a smile. The frightening and terrifying might prompt a quiet reflection. On page 29, Achilles' crew relax during a lull in the action. On page 54, soldiers go about their morning routine as they have done for centuries. On page 83, General Freiberg is having a shave, his mirror propped on a ledge. The less well-known images of war, the routine, the comradeship, the friendship, and the quarrel. The images on pages 36 and 37 give us an insight into the preparation of citizen soldiers for war, what Nata termed the price of citizenship. Young New Zealanders training for war under the watchful gaze of Te Mauna Ruapehu, our army's sacred mountain. The images on page 117 of Lancaster bomber crews preparing for a raid over Germany resonated with me strongly. When servicemen and women are in the moment is unending. those at the political and military interface may have a sense for the war's course, but for those who do the fighting and the flying, there is no identifiable end. We trust in one another and we steel ourselves for the next patrol or the next mission, and we go on again and again. I love the photo on page 158 with the sign writing on the door of the vehicle, "When in doubt, brew up." There is a lot of doubt in war, and therefore a lot of tea and coffee is consumed then as it is now. The image on page 179 provides a vital insight into military medical services. Major S.C. Wilson, performing surgery at a main dressing station, speaks to the can-do attitude of our medical professionals. Whatever the challenges, the care will always be provided. The image on page 216 of Captain Peter Phipps on the bridge of Royalist is important to our post-war history. Vice Admiral Sir Peter Phipps, as he became, was the first of only two naval officers to achieve the post of Chief of the Defence Staff, or in later years, Chief of Defence Force. It must have been wonderful as a young New Zealander to visit the great cities of the world, Cairo, London, Paris, Rome, Athens. Travel in the 1940s was, of course, rare unless you enlisted, which was an attraction for many then as it is today. The photo of two Tuis on page 287 speaks to the fact that Kiwis were everywhere, and the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps provided a major contribution to enable the New Zealand Expeditionary Force to operate so successfully across multiple theatres. Thank you for the opportunity to launch this wonderful book this evening. It is always a pleasure to return to Palmerston North, where I was a student at Massey University before I joined the Army, and where I've returned on a number of postings since then. Kia ora, hui hu tātou katoa. Thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you, Andrew. I much appreciate it. We're going very well, according to plan. In fact, we're running early, although I shouldn't have said that before the mayor comes on. But anyway, our next speaker is His Worship, the Mayor of Palmerston North, Grant Smith. Welcome, Grant.
Thank you, Joe. Kia ora tātou, nau mai, haere mai, and good evening, everybody. Kira, you stole some of my lines.
Sorry.
You can't keep a Glen Harbour book launch down, can you? An earthquake, a couple of storms, hail, even sun. But look, firstly, can I acknowledge Huatahi? Thank you for your blessing. And what can I say to the magnificent use of Glen and Susan's time they've made during their COVID lockdown last year? And it really has added to given us a better insight and understanding to this country's contribution to World War II. And to think this book, The Frontline, contains only really a fraction of those images that were available to tell such an important story. And really, the visual evidence documenting Kiwi service personnel from World War II has remained, which has really remained out of the public knowledge and sight for so long. So thank you, Glenn and Susan, for making it known. It's also a pause to reflect on another great conflict of the 20th century, and I think you touched on it, Glenn, and it's somewhat sobering that today, that you know, the Great War of 1914-18, World War I, and the sacrifice of so many Kiwi lives today in October 12, in 1917, 843 New Zealanders lost their lives at a very muddy and bloody Battle of Passchendaele. And that loss of life has been described by many as New Zealand's darkest hour. We will remember them all again in a month's time, and hopefully we are publicly going to commemorate Armistice Day, following on from a successful public relaunch of Anzac Day gatherings on April 25th this year. So this evening's been a really special privilege to be part of the acknowledgement of Glenn and Susan's sterling work, and on behalf of the City of Palmerston North, a huge congratulations on the massive achievement and also for the most informative presentation. We've had to wait for it, as you said, courtesy of COVID uncertainties, but thanks to your persistent scholarship for the evening tonight. It's a real shame, of course, that not everybody could attend tonight, and with COVID around us, I do hope that everyone here has taken the opportunity. I'm absolutely sure you have, so I'm preaching to the converted here that you're vaccinated, or if you're not, please do get vaccinated. And I also want to take a moment to commend the frontline essential work of the New Zealand Defence Force, being carried out by personnel from Linton and our MIQ facilities all around the country. And thanks to this evening to Colonel Andrew Brown, Commander of the New Zealand Defence College, for your take on the publication. And of course, the contribution that the college makes to our city. And in a partnership arrangement with Massey University, it helps bring two of our region's economic mainstays together, defence and education. And both play a really important part in the city's proud heritage. And actually, it is this year, our 150th year, and it's really been fundamental to Palmy's future progress and prosperity. And that's one of the reasons that this region is able to emerge, I believe, successfully, and I hope, out of last year's lockdown, and why I'm confident that we'll eventually get through this year's restrictions on the positive side. And that's because of our diversity here and our economic base. So along with defence and learning, there's also health, agriculture, logistics, distribution, research, construction, government services, and retail. But with learning and Massey comes Massey University Press. And thank you to Tracy Borgfeldt for sharing. She contacted me during the week and sharing her perspectives on Glyn's book. Also, could I just acknowledge again Huatahi and Tangata Whenua, and also to the Massey Pro Vice Chancellor, Giselle Burns, Professor Kerry Taylor, who was representing Massey Press, but also to members of the City's Defence Heritage Advisory Group for continuing to host these public talks. And I'm heartened, even in COVID times, that we've got a great showing here tonight. And I understand that you're making a sound recording of this event, and that'll be on the NZ Sappers website. To members of the RSA, attendance here tonight, and also I want to acknowledge our own Manawatu Heritage team, especially Maria and Leslie and Virginia. Thank you for getting tonight underway, even if it was very much an act too. Now, most of you will be aware that along with Linton Military Camp and the city's proximity to RNZAF base Ohakia, Palmerston North hopes and creates a number of other sites significant to heritage and development of the New Zealand Defence Force. And in some ways, it does make us New Zealand's defence capital, with over 7,000 personnel, families, contractors and civilians all connected to a defence in our region. And the city holds special and historical charters with both Linton, the New Zealand Army, and Ohakia with the Royal New Zealand Air Force. Another heritage includes the training camp at Awapuni Racecourse with its 1929 memorial to the New Zealand Medical Corps, the 1917 Soldiers Club building on the corner of George and Cuba Streets, the 1926 Cenotaph in the centre of Te Marae Ohine, the square, the Palmerston North Showgrounds, now Arena Manawa 2, where the 28th Māori Battalion were raised and trained, and the Māori Battalion Hall. All these places have real historic military significance for all of our country. And so thanks to the Library Heritage Team for this information, and photos on these significant military heritage sites are available at everyone's fingertips, either on the website or the app. Council will continue to support the promotion of our military heritage, and we'll be working to support the Māori Battalion Hall Trust to further highlight that building, which earlier this year was recognised by the New Zealand Institute of Architects with an enduring architectural award as part of the Cuba Street upgrade. The project is about establishing an inviting connection between the arena and the city's CBD. And coming up on Armistice Day, which I mentioned is only a month away, and following the November 11th public cenotaph service, there will be an unveiling of six more Poppy Places streets in Linton. We'll also be presenting the awards to the winner and runners-up of the Anzac Day-themed Palmerston North Youth Speech Competition that was held in August. COVID willing, we'll also be looking forward to seeing many of you there. So finally, thank you for coming and enjoying this significant occasion and for recognising and respecting the work that has gone into this landmark publication. And Glyn and Susan, we wish you all the best for future endeavours. And now we'll hand over to Huatahi for the closing karakia. Sorry, to my friend here who's wanting to kick me off. Nā reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa.
Thank you, Jack. Really wonderful that you can add to this evening's celebrations. Before inviting Huatahi back for the karakia, I think it's worth letting the author have the final say. So welcome back, Glyn. And I was told that you're not supposed to switch that on in front of the speakers and blast us. So use the ice cream instead.
I will. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Sorry about that noise before, but I'm blaming you, all right?
Mayor of Palmerston North, Grant Smith, Commandant of the New Zealand Defence Force College, Colonel Andrew Brown, colleagues of Massey University, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your attendance here this evening, especially those of you who have travelled some distance to come here. I know people have come from Wairu, from Masterton, and I really appreciate you being here today. Producing a book like The Front Line is always a team effort, and there are many people and organisations I need to acknowledge and thank. My first thanks must be to the three service museums and their staff who provided the bulk of the images, the National Army Museum and the work of Dolores Ho, the National Museum of the Royal New Zealand Navy and the work of Rachel Stallard and Michael Wind, the Air Force Museum of New Zealand and the work of Matthew O'Sullivan and Simon Moody. Then there are the 20-odd people who shared their family photographs of their relatives, and it's great to see some of you here tonight. And so I thank you, Stephen Parsons. I thank you, Neil Francis, down the front there somewhere, I think, and Alan Muntz. Susan and I really appreciated your generosity and assistance, and the front line is so much richer for your support. We also wish to thank Colonel Colin Richardson, who read all the captions and made the many helpful suggestions. And Andrew, I've got to say, when I heard you were launching the book, I was really pleased. It's nice to see you again. I know we don't see each other that often, but I do remember you fondly as a student. Very interesting military history, so thank you for launching the book. The publishing team at Massey University Press, I need to acknowledge. They went out of their way, and I really thank them for their professionalism, their patience, their dedication, and their enthusiasm. This was a difficult book to bring together with all those images, but I think Massey University Press have done us proud. I'd particularly like to thank Nicola Leggett, the publisher who commissioned the book over 5 years ago now, Tracy Borgfeld, the book's project officer, Anna Bobies, who worked quietly behind the scenes, Anna Rogers, our copy editor, and Jill Hughes, our publicist. We're also indebted to the various research institutions we used, particularly the Royal Engineer Corps Memorial Museum at Linton. So thank you, Joe. You can pass on my thanks to them. And the Manawatu Heritage here in Palmerston North, who freely provided additional photographs. I wish to acknowledge and thank my own institution, Massey University, New Zealand's defining university. It's great to have a job where research and publishing books like this is fully supported and encouraged. And I'd like to also thank the people who organised this event tonight. Leslie, Maria, Joe, Victoria and others involved, thank you very much. Finally, I wish to thank my wife Susan, whose name is deservedly on the front cover of the book. I have to say, against her wishes. Susan assisted in all aspects of this book, including typing up much of it, proofing it at least twice. She doesn't want to read it again, she tells me. She hasn't had an easy time with this book. There are two reasons for that. One is the subject matter. You know, war is a brutal, nasty business, and that's in the book. And I have to say, too, living with a writer is never easy. It may shock some of you to know that I'm not always charming and affable. I know, Joe, you're going to find this hard to believe, but it's true. And when I'm writing, I get incredibly focused and become a bit of a tyrant. And Susan has to put up with this, but she always lets me know when I've gone too far. And when I've gone too far, I know I have to try and patch it up, so flowers seem to work really well. The worse I get, the more flowers I have to buy, and I've got to say, this book cost me a lot of flowers, but we got there. So thank you, Susan, for putting up with this and for making the book possible. This book focuses on New Zealand and the Second World War. It is the story of ordinary men and women thrust into the most extraordinary circumstances imaginable. The Second World War remains the bloodiest conflict in human history, a time when, to use the words of Max Hastings, all hell was let loose. The wonder is that not more were destroyed by this experience, and I hope we have recorded a part of their story in this book by using the photographs they took and preserved. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you, Glenn. Much appreciated, and it is a fantastic piece of work. Can I now call upon Huatahi to return and close this evening's event with a karakia?
Ke mā kene kene ki utā, ke mā taratara ki tai. Ke hia ke ana te atākura, he tio, he huka, he hauhu, haumi e hui e tāiki. Travel carefully, family, and have a good night.
Kia ora.